This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
We're begging a few questions this afternoon. Are we an altruistic consumer? Would you spend more money in a space that you know provided excess food to charity? And do you think about those things when you are shopping or making your decisions around your food spending? All of that is going to be explored between now and 2 o'clock. We are talking cravings. In fact, today we are talking charity, Tad Lombardo, and whether consumers are interested in spending more money if they know there is a charity outcome. So this came from a story this week in ABCWA. And the story is about consumers in WA in particular are becoming more interested in buying a donut, for example, if they know that that donut store is providing some much-needed funds to a local charity.
And this is also in contrast to actually just giving money to a charity. Is that...
Well, yes, we can all just give money to charity. That's simple.
Yeah, but it's the whole thing of people generally trying to... They're more than happy to buy food if it's the proceeds going to charity. It's a little bit different when they're just handing over money.
I think it's about, are we being altruistic in our purchases? Yeah. So do we think about... when we go to shop, do we go and shop at an IGA supermarket or an independent supermarket, for example, because we know that supermarket provides its excess goods to charities like Fair Share or First Bite or those who will then take that food and use it to assist people.
And it's kind of the same thing where we do that when we buy eggs. We buy free range eggs, and well, I hope we all buy free range eggs. Meats and things like that are ethical, and it's just another, I guess it's just another level of doing that same thing. It just probably isn't as visited as much.
I think a really good example earlier this year, 2016, with the milk situation, yes, where when people went to the supermarket or to the market and bought milk, they made sure that the milk they purchased was probably more expensive, but it was going to support the farmers. What's alarming is that of the $1.5 billion that was raised through the milk purchases over that period of time, very little of it filtered back to those dairy farmers that we were so concerned about. But it does give us a sense of understanding that we can be more thoughtful about the way that we procure our goods.
Definitely.
We can support smaller independent farmers. We can go and shop at farmers markets because we know there is no middleman. You're not paying the wages of a pimply-faced kid who doesn't know anything about your product by purchasing That's at right. a farmer's market. So it's probably about ethical purchasing and whether we're altruistic. I would like to know if you are indeed altruistic in the way that you purchase. You can send us a text to 0427JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can tweet to cravingsjoy949. Let us know whether you think about your purchases. Our very regular correspondent has already been in touch. Hello, Tad and Pete. Hope all is well in Australia. All is well here in New Jersey, except it's cold. That's
yes,
from Linda.
It would be. Mm. I'm on.
How cold would it be in Jersey at the moment?
Probably about 2 degrees, something like that, Celsius, which is pretty cold. When I was there a couple of weeks ago, it was minus 10 a few days. That's how cold it actually was. It was pretty bitter cold, and you'd walk outside and you would feel like you were just getting an immediate brain freeze with the wind. It was incredible, but I actually enjoyed it.
I've just put my beloved on an airplane. He's on his way to London with his dad.
Should
and
be pretty cold.
It's going to be 2 degrees and 5 degrees and 7 degrees. I said, you've been moaning about the heat and the humidity of Queensland.
Yes.
And now...
the extremes.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. I'd like to be a fly on the wall through that trip.
It should be interesting. It would be good.
They're flying with Royal Brunei.
Oh, okay. And they obviously land in Brunei somewhere?
They do.
Or the only place to land in Brunei is...
Brunei.
The airport.
Small place.
Right.
But it's interesting because Brunei is a Muslim country.
Yep.
And so because the airline is owned by the royal yep. family, it's an alcohol-free flight.
Do they tell you that?
They don't.
In your book? No.
No. Okay. But Nate's sister-in-law is a travel agent,
yep.
and she's also Muslim. So she's booked all the travel for them
yep.
And booked them on Royal Brunei because
right.
she got a good deal. But they can't drink between here and Brunei, Dubai, London.
It's interesting. I mean, nowadays you know it's going to be smoke-free flight. But,
yes.
Yeah, obviously the alcohol side of things is a little bit different.
28 hours of flying and you can't have a gin and tonic on the flight.
That's a challenge.
It is a great challenge indeed. So, yes, we'll get on to this altruism, I think, and discussion about charity. We're going to speak with... Katie Barfield. Katie yep. founded an app called Yumi and a service called Yumi. She's a very dynamic woman and has a wonderful story to tell about how they collect food and resell food yep. and provide food for those who are more in need. And then we shall be joined by Marcus Godinho. He is the CEO of FareShare.
Yep.
FareShare creates about 5,000 meals a day to help those that need it most. Marcus is not so sure that we are altruistic in our purchase. He knows that we are altruistic
right.
with our time, but he's not so sure whether we are altruistic about our purchases. And I think this is an interesting kind of whoop-ass that we might open.
Juxtaposition, almost, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, do you ethically purchase, or do you purchase in a particular way, or are you like...
Do you know what? I do. Mm. I do that. Not necessarily if I'm speaking about going to a restaurant, because a lot of that stuff in a lot of restaurants don't necessarily advertise their menus around that. Mm. I know one of the things that, from my own experience as a trader at the Paran Market,
yeah.
They partner with Second Bite.
Yeah.
So Second Bite comes around every week, Saturday, Sunday, and they collect food. And, you know, according to the stats on the Paran Market website, Second Bite redistributes food to over 70 agencies. And the food that's donated by the traders apparently is enough for 74,500-gram nutritious meals per year. So that's a huge amount of food.
74,000, half a kilo meals a year.
Yeah.
That's, my reckoning, about 1,400 a week.
Yeah, that would be, yeah, definitely.
1,450.
Yeah.
Maths is not my strong point.
No, but it's just, it's an incredible amount of food.
And, it is.
And it's not like this food is bad. It's just it will go bad if it's not, you know, when
Correct.
The market closes for a day, you know, it will go off if it's any longer than that, but it's salvaged.
And the thing that bothers me, I've got a constant crusade against the two big supermarket chains.
Yeah.
If a lemon or a tomato or a carrot doesn't quite look right.
Right.
It can't be sold in the supermarket. Yep. Everything has to be predominantly uniform, predominantly
yep.
Blemish-free. So even if the lemon is in beautiful condition inside, if there is a skin blemish,
yep.
then it can't be sold. So the wastage of the amount of food.
It's crazy. Mm. But it's also, too, I think, I mean, we can blame the super, and they do hold a fair amount of responsibility for that. But I also think it's also changing the psyche of the consumer and saying, okay, if this carrot doesn't look perfectly straight,
can I eat it?
You know, it tastes the same.
But you look at people who pull carrots out of their garden, and quite often they look like they've got two legs or
that's right.
other appendages that are there, and it's
and that's celebrated. You know,
exactly.
So, yeah.
We're going to explore all of that, Tad, between now and 2 p.m. You are on Cravings. I just wanted to say thank you to Blair, our newsreader. It's his very first day.
He's done very well.
That was his second bulletin.
Yep.
And we're very pleased to have him on board. So welcome, Blair, another wonderful volunteer here at Joy 94.9. It is currently 13 minutes past one. You're with Tad and Pete. This is Cravings, and today we are looking at altruism.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
You are on Joy 94.9. It's a quarter past one, and today we're looking at altruism with food. Do we think more about the way we purchase? Do we purchase with ethical thoughts in mind? And what do we do about food waste? How do you at home make your decisions around what happens with the food you buy and what happens with the outlets where you buy your food? Katie Barfield, we've spoken to Katie before. You may remember her. She is the founder of Yumi. It's a wonderful app, and she joins us on the phone from her sun lounge in the Bahamas. Katie, good afternoon.
Hello, Pete. I wish I was. More like Yarraville, but it's still quite nice.
Well, Yarraville is the Bahamas of the West.
It is indeed, darling.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about Yumi first, for those playing at home that aren't familiar with Yumi. What is it about?
Well, Yumi is a B2B platform that enables any supplier or food business, manufacturer, etc., that has any product that they cannot sell through their usual avenues, they can put that onto the platform at no fee, and other food businesses, cafes, restaurants, cages, etc., can purchase that at a significant discount and have a really great impact on the positive impact on the environment, because that food doesn't end up in landfill.
Right. So the emphasis behind the business for you is to prevent us just chucking food into the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. We just think that's a complete crime, and we're trying to do everything we can to ensure that food goes to its purpose, which is obviously for us to enjoy and eat it.
Katie, do you think that consumers in particular are becoming more thoughtful about the way that they purchase?
I think we're getting there. I've seen a big improvement over the last 10 years since I founded Second Bite. Certainly back then, I remember talking about food rescue and people sort of slammed me down and said, what a ridiculous term. No one will understand what that means. Whereas now that's kind of in the vernacular. It's every day. So I think we're moving in the right direction. There's a long way to go yet. We're still throwing out globally 1.3 trillion kilograms of food every year.
It's just such an alarming number that I don't think we can comprehend.
You can't. I guess that, and so I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations and worked out, you know, this is obviously everyone concerned about the 2 billion people yet to come by 2050. How are we going to feed them all? But actually, if you take that 1.3 trillion kilograms, we have more than a kilogram of food to feed every one of those 2 billion every single day of the year. So the food's already there. It's just we're incredibly wasteful.
Katie, it's Tad here. I just wanted to ask, I mean, obviously you're doing things here locally in Australia to help fix that problem. Are there any groups, you know, globally that are trying to do that as well and trying to harness all that waste into something useful?
There are a number of initiatives that, for instance, anaerobic digestion and companies that are trying to turn organic waste into something useful and not see it go to landfill.
Yeah.
But in the space in which we're playing in, which is obviously this platform designed specifically for surplus product, there's one other there's one other example of a company like that in Boston, okay. Called Spoiler Alert.
Right.
At the moment, they're playing in the non-for-profit space particularly. So they take food that's surplus and then they sell that on to food rescue organisations or community programs. It's a very different system over there in America, but that's the other group that we've actually caught up on Skype with them so that we can share learnings and, overcome challenges together, because it is a very complex system that is broken. Our food system is broken and it's incredibly complex.
Katie, we saw a wonderful initiative just about a year ago from the French government. France became the first country in the world that banned supermarkets from throwing away or destroying unsold food. And this law forces them to, and it was unanimously passed by the French Senate, forces them to donate to charities and food banks, not unlike Second Bite and Fair Share and those. So is the rest of the world, or certainly even the rest of the EU and maybe Australia is a good answer, are we going to catch up to that point where it will be illegal? It's certainly immoral, illegal to throw away food waste.
Well, I don't know if Australia will make it that far. And I don't.
You know that under a Dillon government this would happen, don't you?
I do know that. Dillon for Prime Minister. I think there are a number of ways that countries are tackling this. So France, as you said, made it illegal. Italy have gone a little bit more with carrot over stick, and they've offered significant incentives for companies to donate. By that I mean financial incentives, because that's what speaks to big business, is money. Mm. So if they donate their food, they get some tax write-offs for that food. I think there are a number of ways we can approach it. I straddle both camps. I think that if we can encourage businesses to donate product, then that's the best way to go, because, you know, if you force and make something illegal, there have been stories that supermarkets will just allow food to spoil and then it is no longer edible and then it's not illegal for them to throw it out.
Which is a bother. I think I like the Italian version where I think the carrot, as you say, it's carrot rather than stick is incentivizes people to make those ethical decisions. The story that we've looked at earlier in the week out of Western Australia was that people in WA in particular are starting to become more thoughtful about the end result of their food purchases. So, for example, if an independent supermarket chain, for example, or an independent supermarket determined that they would advise people that their unsold food is going to Fair Share or Food Bank or Second Bite, that the people of WA are becoming more thoughtful about going to those places where they know there is going to be a result. Do you think, certainly on the eastern states, do you think we're at that point? Are we leading them? Are we behind them? What's your take?
There's been a huge increase in the amount of food that is flowing through to food rescue organisations and a much greater awareness about the increasing need within the community. So I think we are gaining good traction here. We've seen, certainly at Second Bite, we saw the amount of product that is collected and redistributed jump up to 16 million kilograms this year. That's enough for 32 million meals, to give your listeners some perspective on it. So there's definitely an awareness around food waste and also need within the community. So that encourages me. What I would like to see is the instances of food insecurity begin to drop, the more food that is put through the community programs, and that doesn't actually seem to be happening. So that's another area that we need to really explore and understand what these complex reasons are that people find themselves without food. It is, food insecurity is a very complex problem, just giving people free food is not going to be the answer. We need to come at this in many different ways and make really good quality, healthy food affordable for everybody, because that is very possible. With the amount we're throwing away, we could bring a lot more into the system of healthy product and make that really available to everyone.
Is there, apart from people like yourself, is there anybody within the political system you know that is starting to drive this sort of initiative?
Not that I've come across, but we haven't.
Big breath, Lexi.
Yeah, we haven't begun our advocacy as yet. So So that is the next step that we want to take at UMI, and that is to advocate for increased costs of food in landfill, which is another way to tackle it, because that disincentivises people from dumping it. You know, again, tax concessions for companies that do donate, because it is actually a cost to businesses to donate products as opposed to dumping it. The system is set up for them to dump. And abhorrent as that is, that's just the state of play at the moment.
I just want to clear a bit of confusion in my own head. How is it more costly to donate than dispose?
Okay, so if you've got a very large greenhouse, for example, in Adelaide, and you grow hundreds of tons of tomatoes, there will be a percentage of tomatoes that don't meet the very strict specifications of the supermarkets and some of the major retailers. Mm. Okay. At the moment, the process is that they just go straight to a big hole in the ground. If they have to actually sort them, pack them into boxes, paying for the boxes and the packaging, and then ship them out of Adelaide to wherever it is they may need to be, so it's a couple of hours out of Adelaide, and I'm talking about a specific greenhouse, then, you know, that is a cost to them, albeit not a huge cost, but it still is. So we need to incentivise businesses to actually, you know, pick, pack and ship this product that is deemed imperfect by the major retailers and make it at least a cost-neutral exercise for them.
Mm. So a lot of the dumping, just to clarify, is actually happening at the farms, obviously, or the main depots and things like that, when they're being classed as being acceptable or not?
Absolutely. In fact, 3.9 million tons of food in Australia every year is food waste that happens at the commercial end. That's before it ever gets to a consumer's house. So, and there are some reports that we're losing up to 50% before it leaves farm gate, because it is seen as imperfect, doesn't meet the specifications, which is why, as Pete knows, I've been a bee advocate for years about, you know, food as nature intends. It is actually perfect. There's the same input cost to grow a wonky carrot as there is to grow a straight one. So,
and yet,
why do you care that it's wonky?
If we use those tomatoes as an example, those imperfect tomatoes would be perfect to go into cans. And yet we're importing about 80% of tomatoes that we buy in supermarkets are imported.
And absolutely not necessary.
No.
Because we have more than enough in this country to sustain us. We have more than enough.
It's alarming.
But we continue to import. It is really alarming. It is really alarming. And the cost to the planet, the cost to our health, and the cost to our future is just immeasurable.
Mm. Katie, if people want to know a little bit more about UMI or want to be more informed about the advocacy that you are involved with, how do they find out?
Well, you can head to our website, which is www.umifood, and that's yumefood.com.au. I should say that UMI means to dream in Japanese, so we are dreaming of a better future.
Well, I can't think of a more appropriate use of Japanese, and it also talks about you and me making these decisions together.
It does, absolutely.
Katie, good to talk to you as always, my dear, and continued strength in your advocacy, making sure that we prepare our planet for the future a little better.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to talk to you both.
Pleasure, darling. Thanks. Now back to your sun lounge in the Bahamas. Off you go.
Bye.
Katie Barfield from UMI. We might tweet out that that web address, because I think it's so many people don't even think when they're making those purchases about, you know, these bananas all look perfect, these carrots all look perfect, these tomatoes look perfect.
And you know, Katie makes a good point too, that if we're not having to import all these tomatoes from wherever they're coming from,
Italy mostly,
right, and you know, you think about the greenhouse gases that are involved with that, and that process that's unnecessary. You know, if we can do it here in Australia or wherever.
One of the major supermarkets just in the last few days selling American lemons imported from the USA, and at quite a cost. It's just
crazy.
Yeah. It is 28 minutes past one. You are on Cravings with Tate and Pete. We're getting a little bit, we're becoming advocates today.
Absolutely.
But so we might lighten you up with a bit of music, and then we'll introduce you to Marcus Cardinho. He is from Fair Share. 28 minutes past one on your favourite radio station. You're on Joy 94.9.
Cravings will be back shortly, so don't go too far. But if you do miss anything, you'll hear it on the Cravings Podcast at joy.org.au/cravings via iTunes or your favourite podcast site. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspagatata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
You are on joy.org.au. You are you are on Joy 94.9. It's Pete, Dylan and Tad. We're about to speak to Marcos Godinho. He is the CEO of Fair Share. Tad, talk about the initiative at the Pran Market again, because I think that's quite important.
Yeah, definitely. The Pran Market partners with Second Bite, and all the traders get together all the food that they are either unable to sell on that particular day or are going to be throwing out within a day or so. Second Bite gets that and then redistributes the produce to about 70 other agencies who then turn that into meals. And every year, there's about 74,000 500-gram nutritious meals that are put out there for people that need them the most. So it's quite an interesting initiative.
And is that all traders that support that?
It's all the traders, yep. So that's everybody who's there and has something that they're wanting to contribute. Second Bite come around every Saturday and Sunday at the end of the day and bring their trolleys. They've got refrigerated trucks in the loading dock that's ready to take the produce back to the various people that they support and the agencies that that they collect for.
Do you give them chocolates?
Do you know what? I'm fortunate the chocolates never go off. They sell out. but honestly, if I did, of course I would. If I had anything that I knew that I wasn't going to be able to use or was going to go to waste because for any reason, I certainly would give it to them.
Yeah, it's so it's mostly fresh food and...
It is fresh produce. Other things too. Sometimes they'll even get flowers, and they'll distribute the flowers to different places that serve the meals and just to uplift the people, the recipient that receive
that would be
meals.
Really nice if you're feeling a bit.
Definitely. So it could be anything that they'd be happy to collect on behalf of the people that need it the most in our communities. So it's something that. You don't necessarily see happening when you're visiting the market on a daily basis. But if you're there at the end of the day, of course, it does happen and you can clearly see it. And it's a heartwarming thing to actually see that these people with Second Bite, which generally are volunteers that go around as well collecting on behalf of people that need it the most.
I like the idea. There was a woman set up a service, I suppose, but she was using it as a singles event. So she would get a whole bunch of individuals together and they would go in and they would cook. And then that food would be delivered to people who needed it. But there was the process of making it and actually getting to know somebody while you were doing it.
Yeah, and that's makes it mean that much more, I think, to the people that are trying to help out as well. I think it's about community and individuals doing what they can to help out too. And, obviously... bigger agencies need to take a bit more of a, or I should say government agencies probably need to take a bit more of a role with the grassroots problems with food waste on a larger scale. But I think, a lot of people might feel that their contribution isn't enough or doesn't make a difference, but it does. If one person's doing it, then two people, then 10 people, it compounds that way, and it's important.
It does indeed.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are indeed. You're with Tad and myself. Tad's going to be driving this little Cravings truck after next week when I head to far north Brighton in Queensland to...
You'll be on the beach.
I will be. Well, I will be quite literally lousing around. We are talking about altruism in food and whether it affects our decisions or not. We've spoken to Katie Barfield and we are now joined by Marcos Godinho. He's the CEO of Fair Share. And we might actually have a slightly different opinion, I think. Marcos, hello.
G'day. Good afternoon.
Good to talk to you. Hey, my question to you earlier when we were sort of setting this program up is, are we more altruistic about the way that we purchase food And you're not entirely convinced that we are you?
Well, I look back at generations gone by into the last century, and were those people less altruistic than we are today? I don't think that we're any more or any less altruistic. I think there are people out there who are incredibly generous, whether they're wealthy or not, and there are some that aren't. So I wouldn't say that we're more generous now. I think, though, that there are many more opportunities for people to donate.
So let's if we look at this from your perspective at Fair Share, is it people donating their time, or is it the donations you get food wise that are most valuable to you?
Oh, look, there are three sides to Fair Share. We need volunteers to cook meals, and we have hundreds of people helping out in that regard. We need businesses to make available the surplus food that we have, and despite us cooking the surplus food and with volunteers, we still need funds to run, so we need donations. So it's a mix of the three. But what we find is that when we do reach out to people or businesses and say that, look, this is what we need at the moment, there's an overwhelming response. And I think people are more likely to give if they're asked, and ask for something quite specific.
So what specific... I hate this sentence. It always reminds me of Kath and Kim. What specifically do you ask for on any given day?
Well, it depends what we need. I mean, we may have gone out there and collected a lot of eggs for one supply from a farmer, say, a lot of cream from a big multinational dairy company. We've got a lot of ham at the moment left over from Christmas, not surprisingly. We've got our own vegetables, but we just don't have enough pastry. So we might be reaching out to companies like Goodman Fielder or Boscastle Pies or the Pastry Lounge or any one of those supporters and say, hey, look, we could be producing so many egg and bacon pies or quiches at the moment, but we just don't have enough pastries anyway. That's Germany at the moment, or could you make a donation of some? So, I mean, that's to give you a very concrete example of something we may ask for.
That's an interesting thing to ask for as well, because I would just automatically, and it's the way my brain works, I suppose, I would just automatically go, oh yeah, I'll just make the pastry, I'll get some volleys in to make the pastry. But then to do that you need the flour, the shortening, the equipment, so it's not as simple as that, we'll just whip it up, is it?
Well, we do that as well. Times when we can't get enough and we do get the big boomer out and make our own pastries. So look, you hear a lot about innovation these days, and they're more innovative than our chefs, because every day it's that old mystery box of what have we got and how can we make 5,000 meals today over our morning and afternoon and evening shifts.
Marcus, do you think people would go and shop at a particular place or go and eat at a particular place, or do you think people's purchases may be affected if they know... if it's somewhere in the advertising of the independent supermarket or indeed one of the two big chains that we support Fair Share, do you think giving that information to people will allow them to be more thoughtful about that sort of ethical purchase?
No doubt some will, but others are motivated by other things. So people will be always motivated by price, there's convenience as well in terms of location. But what we see the major retailers doing more and more is promoting their work they're doing with charities like Fair Share, getting out there and being far more vocal about the collaboration than, say, they were 5 years ago or more. And to me, when we first started collecting from supermarkets, I just thought it was a no-brainer. I mean, there are many great causes out there for supermarkets.
Marcus, sorry, I hate to cut in. Can you do me a favour and jump about two feet to the left? Because your line's just gone really ropey and we're just having a bit of difficulty with those last couple of sentences. So I don't know whether you moved while we were in conversation, but we seem to just... we lost you a bit.
No, I'll try that. That might be better now.
Perfect. Thank you.
How's that sound?
Yeah, lovely.
look, I just think that supermarkets are now promoting far more what they're doing with food charities than they were when they initially started. It may have been because they were just putting their toe in the water. But right across Australia now, they have charities working with them to make sure that the surplus food that they do have, And when you think about it, how many of us buy our groceries from supermarkets? They turn over so much food and they have so much left over, even when they're really well managed. And so there are more of us, more charities out there going to those stores, and there are more people who... And those supermarkets are now really promoting what they're doing with their sharing with others.
Just about that, your own thoughts, do you think that they're promoting that in a... I don't want to get controversial here, but in a positive way? Are they just promoting it to say, look at what we're doing and we're wonderful? And, you know, I mean, is what they're promoting and what they're doing, is it actually having an impact? I guess that's the question that I would be curious about, instead of just using it as a marketing opportunity.
Look, no doubt there's both of it. I think they very much are promoting something that accords with what they are doing. And they're doing a lot more of it. They're not just making food available to charities. They're now even funding the charities to give them the resources to come and pick it up. So that's great.
Yeah.
But look, they're communicating that they're doing it because, let's be frank, the supermarkets have come under a lot of fire over the last few years. I'm not going to place judgment on whether that's deserved or not.
No.
Leave that to me, Marcus.
Certainly there are reputation challenges there that they have. And I think when they are doing good things like working with Fair Share and others, then being out there and talking about that, well, you know, I think credit where it's due. I don't begrudge them out there promoting it. And look, what they're also helping doing is not just dipping their hands into their pockets and donating to the charities, but they're encouraging their customers to do so as well.
Which will have a knock-on effect at some point. Marcus,
absolutely.
We were just talking to Katie Barfield earlier. I'm sure that you two know one another well.
Absolutely.
We mentioned the fact that about a year ago, the French government enacted into law a piece of legislation that prevented supermarkets from disposing of unsold food, and actually was almost, they're forced into giving them to charity. The Italians have taken a slightly more gentle approach by incentivising businesses with tax offsets and that sort of thing. Do you think Australia is in a position that we might catch up with that? I'd be interested in your opinion on this.
Yeah, look, I might be a bit controversial here, and I'll just go back about 15 years. I've, for many years, with environment organisations, called for regulation on environmental issues, and I've been criticised in the past by especially business doing so. In the case of food, though, I think it's a bit different, because Australia is really at the vanguard of collecting surplus food from supermarkets. We're years ahead of where other countries are at, and I see stories that people send me from over in Europe, and I think, well, it's great that they're doing it. Gee, we were doing this 8, 9, 10 years ago. So I think that when you look at how much surplus food is being collected from the supermarkets, when I look at the reach of charities across the supermarket chains, and I think about, well, if regulation was to be introduced to require Aldi, Costco, Woolworths, Coles to hand over their surplus food to charities, what's it going to achieve? Well, they're already all doing it, and they're doing it in spades. And there are a number of charities that have popped up, including Katie Barfield's old one, Second Bite, ours, that are working with them and doing great work. So I think if you introduce regulation, then you've got compliance, then you've got reporting, you've got bureaucrats that are employed within the public sector. You introduce what you're doing is you're taking resources away from the actual doing.
Yeah, and more about
putting food aside. And it's more about the reporting and the compliance, and the auditing and so forth. And what I'd much rather see is government saying, well, look, this is something that we think is important. And at the moment, we've got charities and we've got the food companies that are donating to those charities, putting their hands in their pockets and fundraising and so forth.
Potentially creating another level of surplus.
Beg your pardon?
It's just potentially creating a different level of surplus. If there is, if everybody's forced to do it, then you're going to end up with surplus food that you almost won't be able to use.
Oh, look, I wouldn't say that. We turn over a lot of food, and I know others have got more and more capacity than they did 10 years ago to capture this surplus food. So I don't think that's the issue. I mean, we're going to call from a supermarket and they've got 23 pallets of meatloaf with one day left on it. We'll take that. We'll freeze it. and we'll draw down on it, we'll bank it and draw down on it over the next few months. So we've got the capacity to, as a sector, be able to capture that food. What I just don't want to see is regulation being introduced for the sake of it, and then hold resources tied up in compliance rather than those resources being used to actually, for instance, within supermarkets, to actually manage putting it aside for charities, to working with charities, and that money going to charities to be able to have more vans on the road and more kitchens to cook more meals and to have more vans to get it out to people who need it.
Maybe they just need... Maybe
that may be a controversial thing, because I think the populist thing to do is say, let's have more regulation.
No, I'm with you.
We need a lot of regulation in other parts, but just I wouldn't say specifically in this instance.
Mm.
But possibly name and shame the ones that aren't doing anything about it as well, as opposed to the regulation and you know, somehow get to the bottom of
more
that.
More controversy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, I'm not sure what percentage of groceries are purchased from even just Coles and Woolworths. But
it's from the two big ones, it's 80-something percent. It's a very, very, very high number.
Okay, and then you add Aldi and Costco, and you've got others coming in to the market from overseas.
Plus the independent grocers, the IGAs and the Food Works and all of those.
Yeah. Mm. Now, I can't talk for those independents, but I do know the big ones, and you're saying just two of them make up 80%. Well, they're already doing it.
Mm. Right.
So I don't think introducing regulation is going to enable charities to get more surplus food and more meals and other food going out to people who are doing it tough.
Marcus, if people want to know more or people want to lend their assistance, I know you have a reserve list of volunteers that you haven't been able to pull off the bench yet. How can they find out more about what Fair Share does? They might be able to donate you some money or something.
Yep, the best thing to do is to jump on the internet, www.fairshare, that's F-A-R-E, as in food, share.net.au. Just Google us and you'll find us. But yeah, we do. We have 830 people who regularly volunteer with us. We do have a few hundred more people on a waiting list, but look, people come and go for all sorts of reasons, opportunities are always opening up.
So did you ever see the thing that Melina Shamroth did, where she started a kind of a singles event, a dating service, almost, by putting people together?
We have all sorts of groups of people coming down. We have a lot of corporate. Every day we have between one and three companies coming down and doing team building, corporate social responsibility, half day with us. We very much, for a number of years there, we're doing singles nights once a week, and we even had a couple of marriages come out of our kitchen. But look, there's and that's a special part of Fair Share. Yes, we're feeding people who are doing it tough. Yes, we're stopping food from being wasted. But you've got those 800-plus people who are coming into the kitchen and working, whether it be in the evening, in the afternoon, in the morning, and there's a really strong camaraderie amongst them, and there are friendships and there's support, and I just think that that's a byproduct of what we do that's so incredibly valuable and rich, and it's just really heartening when you hear about that waiting list of people who actually want to come and volunteer with us.
Your next singles night, you've got to do one that's same sex.
We've done those.
Oh, okay. Hardly a new idea then. Mate, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
We've done younger ones, older ones. So the problem was, and this is specific to the heterosexual, we ran out of blokes. So Melina started introducing women's networking nights. But no, we had a lot of fun with those.
I can only imagine. The innuendo alone would have been incredible. Mate, good to talk to you.
All the best.
Thanks for your time. That's Marcus Godinho. He is the CEO of Fair Share.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Tad, we have to go. It's 10 seconds to go.
Too much fun.
Russ is with his team on the Escape Pod. They've got author Matthew Boulder, and they're talking about going to New Orleans. All that's coming up. Thank you for your company. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. See you.
We'll probably talk about Melbourne Food and Wine next week just because we can.
Yep.
Over to the Escape Pod. We're done. We're out. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata, over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and
so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.